found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. The Maria Sanchez Show. Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships, entertainment. Miss a day? Download the podcast at LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is the Maria Sanchez Show. Thank you for listening. It's Tuesday, July 16th, 9 o'clock Pacific. We appreciate if you're listening live. And then also, if you download, which I know you do, because it seems that the majority of you are listening via download, we appreciate that too, right here at LATalkRadio.com, MariaSanchezShow.com, iTunes, and Stitcher as well. This morning, we have an etiquette expert visiting with us. She is the co-author of Power of Civility and the founder of Etiquette Consulting Incorporated. She works with large corporations as well as schools and universities, including some institutions here in Southern California, USC, Fight On, UCLA, and Mount St. Mary's. And she's regarded as the foremost authority in business and social etiquette. She's going to talk with us about what does that mean to be civil in today's day and age, because there's so much that has changed since I was growing up. And also some table etiquette and those kinds of things that not everybody might know about. So we're going to go into that. And then our next guest is Ellen Smoke. She visited with us last Tuesday exactly at 9:35 Pacific, talking about relationships. And today she's going to be speaking with us about strong, accomplished, capable, achieving women and why and how that is a threat to men. But we have George Zimmerman in the news. There's some of the post-verdict backlash going on. Juror B-37, a mother of two who grew up in a military family and used to have a permit to carry a concealed weapon, was interviewed by Anderson Cooper yesterday. Her identity was concealed, and her quote is, "All of us thought race did not play a role. He had a right to defend himself." And she said, "I think Trayvon got mad and attacked him." She had signed a deal to write a book with her husband, who's an attorney, about the trial, but she's decided not to do that. What was interesting is she said that she didn't, because they were sequestered, she didn't realize the furor that was going on outside, and she decided that it wouldn't be healing, it wouldn't be cathartic, that it might just create more problems, so she's abandoning that, which I think is actually awesome for her. She told CNN that an initial poll of the six women showed that three favored not guilty, two voted for manslaughter, and one opted for second-degree murder. Her quote is, "There was a couple of them in there that wanted to find him guilty of something. And after hours and hours and hours of deliberating over the law and reading it over and over and over again, we just decided there's no other place, no other way or place to go." She said, "They worked hard to reach a verdict. They cried over the decision. I want people to know that we put everything into it. We thought about it over and over." On one crucial point of contention, she said, most, if not all, of the six jurors believed it was Zimmerman and not Martin who was calling for help in the background of a 911 emergency call. "I think it was George Zimmerman's." All but probably one juror agreed about that. Also yesterday, George Zimmerman's chief defense attorney, Mark O'Mara, said that the prosecution was a disgrace to my profession, and he pledged a new effort to impose sanctions against them. O'Mara has accused the prosecutors of several Brady violations, and a Brady disclosure is that the prosecutors have to share evidence with the defense attorneys, especially if it helps exonerate the defendants. So Judge Deborah Nelson had postponed some of her decisions on sanctions until after the trial, saying that the process was time-consuming. So that's going to be readdressed. And O'Mara told Reuters in New York yesterday, his quote is, "This is not acceptable and is not going to be tolerated in any case that I'm involved in. They are a disgrace to my profession. They said my client was lucky to have been acquitted. Really? So here's something interesting, that the prosecution, their office confirmed that it had fired its information technology director, Ben Krudbos, K-R-U-I-D-B-O-S, who testified in the pretrial hearing that files he created with text messages and images he retrieved from Martin's phone were not handed to the defense. So he also testified last month that he found embarrassing photos on Trayvon Martin's phone that included pictures of a clump of jewelry on a bed, underage nude females, marijuana plants, and a hand holding a semi-automatic pistol. So O'Mara said he intends to amend his request for sanctions against the prosecutors in light of testimony from the trial, calling the prosecutor's failure to turn over data from Martin's phone records for months as an undeniable Brady violation. So we haven't heard the last of that. And then there's also protests that are being organized. There have been events that have been happening, of course, all over the country. And we're going to have to spend some time trying to heal. So in our effort to have good news, we have some good news about dementia and Alzheimer's. There is Alzheimer's Association that is having their meeting. It's called the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. And yesterday in Boston, they found that there was a reduction in folks who are likely to develop Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia if they stay on their job longer. The study looked at health and insurance records of more than 429,000 workers in France and found that the risk of developing dementia declined with each additional year worked beyond an average retirement age. So in other words, the use it or lose it hypothesis seems to be true. So workers who postpone retirement are less likely to develop Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia known to affect the elderly than those who leave their jobs at age 60. So delaying retirement might guard against dementia, and they're saying that since Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in the United States, and this is according to the Alzheimer's Association, that's affecting about 5.2 million Americans currently living with the disease, that's a big population that won't necessarily have to increase if people will stay mentally alert and active. And in conjunction with this, a new study has found that dementia rates among people 65 and older have dropped by 25% over the past two decades. So this study was published today in Britain. It's a British study, and it says the dementia rates would fall and mental acuity improve as the population grows healthier and better educated. So that means that we have an effect on if and how we will decline. So incidence is lower among those who control their blood pressure and their cholesterol. It's lower among those who are better educated and who take better care of themselves. So good news on all of that, all of those fronts. So we here in Southern California are having a heat wave. They say they're going to have 100 degree temperatures on the East Coast. And obviously this is affecting our ability to sleep. So why? Because high temperatures affect our body's natural cooling process as we prepare for sleep. The body normally releases heat through the hands, face, and feet around the time of sleep onset and continues to cool usually until 4 o'clock in the morning. So if anything is preventing that decrease in temperature in our body, then our sleep quality is impaired and it's difficult to fall asleep. So they're suggesting, this is something I've never heard, is to put your pillow in the refrigerator during the day and get it before you go to bed. They also say that your bed linens are important. Natural fibers are best. If your mattress is made from foam or other synthetic materials, cover it with a mattress protector that has cotton in it. And rather than sleeping naked, it's better to have loose-fitting nightclothes in cotton or silk because natural fibers wick away moisture from your skin, and also spreading out is better. They suggest that air circulation is important, so use a ceiling fan or a portable fan, or just open up your doors and windows as the temperatures permit. They also suggest during the day, close the windows, curtains, shutters to keep the sun out, and then open them in the evening once the heat has abated. And if you can't sleep, if you're having insomnia, they suggest running your wrists and your hands under cold tap water for a few minutes, dry your hands, and go straight back to bed. And finally, if you didn't get the sleep you need, they suggest a nap. A nap in the day will help counteract the effects of lost sleep. Any amount of sleep is helpful. But you don't, they're saying you don't have to match what you lost, but they suggest if you can to get 1.5 hours as a catch-up nap. But if you can't and you have to reduce it to 30 minutes, that's okay too, because you'll probably get some deep sleep and you'll get a lot of recovery from that. And finally, starting today in Ireland, Elizabeth Taylor's some of her personal items, including jewelry, cocktail dresses, and film costumes, go on display, and they're going to be auctioned off in Beverly Hills on October 12th. So one of the items is an 18-karat gold multi-gem earring and necklace set. It includes topaz, diamond, peridot, and citrine gemstones. They also have something that she wore in the movie Cleopatra, the falcon headdress. The headdress helped score the film an Oscar award for costume design. And there is a spaghetti strap gown and a bolero jacket designed by a South African couturier that she wore to Richard Burton's 50th birthday party. And an antique inlaid wood stagecoach box used by her mother, which includes glass-cut toiletry jars and mother-of-pearl handles. And the prices that they're quoting seem rather reasonable. They're saying like $6,000 to $8,000 for that. The 18-karat multi-gem, $10,000 to $15,000. But, of course, I would think the nostalgia factor is going to drive some of those up. So she was nominated for 5 Oscars. She won the Best Actress Oscar Award for Butterfield 8, and then again for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And, of course, she died in 2011 at the age of 79 and had a life of love and loss and 8 marriages, 2 of them to Richard Burton. So now we're going to get on the line Jules Hurst, our etiquette expert and the author of The Power of Civility, to talk about etiquette and manners in modern times.
Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning, Jules. This is Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the program. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you, and thank you for making yourself available to us, because I see less and less of what you are promoting, which is etiquette and manners. And it's probably because I was raised by folks that speak English as their second language. So my orientation in life was like my parents, we only called their friends Mr. and Mrs. or Mr. and Doctor or whatever. And I raised my children to do that, but I believe I was the only one of my peers that did so. So I'm curious what your take is on civility and etiquette in modern times, and where do we stand on that in terms of what once was and what isn't, and what is appropriate and what is not.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. We have seen a decline in just social niceness and civility, and just your what used to be once considered basic manners, as you said, addressing, you know, our elders as Mr. and or Miss, which is still actually acceptable and also is a manner in the social world. When you're introduced to someone, you are to call them Mr. and or Miss, and then their last name, you know, et cetera. But that doesn't happen anymore for, you know, whatever reason. It's just, I guess, the lack of training from our parents. And especially now with cell phones, I mean, there's just so many faux pas that are going on out there. Mm-hmm. People face-to-face interaction, and they're texting while they're speaking to you. Well, you know, the person you are with should have 100% of your attention. And if it's that important that you need to be texting, then you need to excuse yourself or tell the person at least that, you know, I need to finish this, and then put your phone away. So they're just, you know, where would you like to begin? There are a selection of manners that we as a society today are just, you know, many faux pas to cover. So,
well, one of the things that a girlfriend told me over the weekend which I found really interesting, is I introduced her and her date to a date of mine, and she said both of their first impression was weak, limp handshake.
Oh.
And I thought, wow, isn't that something in this day and age? And now, both my girlfriend and I have very firm, strong handshakes, which my father taught me early on, like make an impression, like, you know, don't squeeze them, but make it firm. And to this day, I'll have men say, wow, nice handshake, you know. So I was like, so I talk about a first impression. I guess you could go with that and a mere introduction. And here's a great question that I have, Jules. Who is supposed to be being introduced to whom?
Okay, so first thing on the introduction, it depends, is it business and is it social? Because in business, you know, there are new rules, not so much new, but from, you know, from when manners, from, you know, Emily Post days, because in the business world, women are equal to men. Therefore, we don't have to wait, you know, to be introduced, we being women, don't have to wait to be introduced to a man. You know, there's no more, that's not an issue, I guess, in the business world. So in business, it goes by rank, not gender.
So wait a second. Whoever has the higher rank, that is who gets introduced?
First.
Okay. In other words, you say to that person, I would like to introduce you to, or no, you say to the other person, the one who has the rank, they get introduced. In other words, let's say there's a CEO and there's a vice president.
Okay.
You say, I'd like the CEO to meet the vice president, or I'd like the vice president to meet the CEO?
The CEO is, you know, the ruler, quote unquote, you know, he is the most, you know, again, according to rank, the CEO is the most important person in that lineup. So if Mr. CEO, I would like to introduce you to Mr. VP, except if there's a client involved. If there's a client involved, then the client is more important than anybody else in the organization. So then if the client from Chicago, I would like to introduce you to.
Interesting.
Yeah, but the most important thing, and because there's a lot of rules, you know, a lot of, you know, if it's this or this, or if it's this or that, make the introduction. That is the rudest thing that you can do, is not, you know, oh, I don't remember the rules. Oh, I don't remember their name. Oh, I don't, you know, oh, I thought they knew each other. Never assume anything. Still make the introduction. If they know each other, no big deal. But how are you to know? So just, you know, never assume. So now in the social world, when it comes to introductions, it's by gender, age and gender. So an older person to a younger person, female to a male. Now, obviously, you're not going to go and ask somebody, exactly how old are you? And you know, so, again, the most important thing out of everything is making the introduction and, you know, what their response is. And nice to meet you, et cetera. With a firm handshake. No lip fit.
and looking them in the eyes.
Look in the eyes. Stand up straight. Shoulders back. You know, that power position. You know, you are in control of your own body. You know, and a firm handshake with a smile on that face. Yes, absolutely.
Now, what I find awkward is when I introduce myself to somebody, hi, my name's Maria Sanchez, and they go, oh, nice to meet you. And then they don't say anything. So what I have taken to doing is, and what is your name?
Right, absolutely. And that's what I tell clients is there's going to be people that just don't talk. And you're going to have to work really hard to get anything out of them. And that's okay. But at least you know the manners, the rules, what you're supposed to do. You introduce yourself. If they don't say anything, and what is your name, and you know, wait a couple of seconds, you know, a couple of beats. If they still don't respond to anything else, then you can ask those small talk type questions, and you know, and just take it from there. And that's just, unfortunately, again, the lack of I don't know, social, you know, I don't know if it's social anxiety. I don't know what it is exactly. Lack of manners, shy, you know, I don't know.
Well, yeah, and or ignorant. And then the other thing that I really detest is if I know somebody, but I don't know them well, and I forgot their name, and I'm introducing them to someone else. So I will prep my colleague or my date or whatever and say, if I don't introduce them by name, that's because I don't remember. So I'm going to introduce you, and hopefully they'll offer their name, which they sometimes do and sometimes don't. So it's like...
Yeah. Absolutely. If you wait a second, sometimes the person will will say their name. You know, oh, I am Jules Hurst. And sometimes they won't. And there is nothing wrong saying, you know, I'm so sorry. I forgot, you know, what's your name again? I completely forgot. There's nothing wrong with that. You forgot. I mean, you know, just, okay. It's better than not making the introduction because you forgot someone's name.
Now, in the social world, I'm surprised that the female to male thing is still going on. And actually, that's kind of heartening. I don't think anybody pays attention to that much. But I know that with men and women, and I'm single, that men say they don't know what to do anymore. Do they open the door? Do they not? And I say, I want to be treated like a lady.
Right. Absolutely. And that's, yes, and social and business are still different. When it comes to the social side, yes, absolutely. Men still treat women like ladies. And ladies, it's okay for a gentleman to open the door for you, pull out your chair. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. We're not saying that you can't or that you're less than. Just allow them to treat you like a woman. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, in the business side, yeah, absolutely. We can open our own doors. We can pull out our own chairs. You know, you completely different. And that's where I kind of see a gray line sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, like you said, you know, we don't know what to do. We don't want, you know, man, we don't want to get yelled at by a woman who's going to tell us we can pull out our own chair.
Right.
So that's where, you know, they kind of carried over the business into the social side, but there's nothing wrong with being treated like a lady. Nothing wrong whatsoever.
Now, Jules, let's help our listeners who don't know about meal etiquette, because I'm constantly shocked by the lack of table manners from grown adults. And obviously they don't know better or else they would do what's supposed to be done. And I'm not that finicky, but like the napkin, it should be on your lap almost as soon as you sit down, correct?
Correct. Once everybody is at the table and we start to gather together, and the first thing you do is put your napkin on your lap. Now, there's always going to be exceptions to the rules. So if you are at a private gathering at someone's home, then you follow the host and or hostess lead. But if you're at a larger event, then you really only follow the people at your table. So as soon as you sit down, you put your napkin on your lap. Whoever, if there's a bread basket there, whoever is in front or closest to that bread basket, pick it up without taking the bread, pass it, you know, and start circulating it. And the last thing, working your utensils from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
So that also helps if you have, you know, 3 forks, 2 forks, etc., outside in. And if worst case scenario, you don't remember which is your drink cup, you don't remember which is your bread plate, just think the car, BMW, bread, my bread plate on the left, meal, M, my meal plate in the middle, and W, my water glass on the right-hand side. BMW,
oh,
there you go. Good
nice.
To go.
Okay, but Jules, the bread plate,
yes.
The person who's
yes.
closest to it takes it, does not serve themselves, and passes it left or right?
It passes it to the right.
Okay. And
it
then the butter follows?
The butter follows, correct.
Okay.
Whoever's closest to the butter picks it up and circulates that around.
Now, I'm also understanding that you're not supposed to cut bread, but you're supposed to break it with your hands.
Yes, absolutely. Good point. You don't take a knife to a bread except for the butter spreader that's either with the bread plate or the butter plate. If there's only one butter plate, there's not the individual packets. So you tear a piece of bread, you take your knife, that's when you would use your knife, butter it 1 to 2 pieces at a time and then eat. So you don't cut it in half while it's still hot. You put, you know, lather it with butter. And yeah, we don't do that. It's 1 to 2 pieces cut. And I know a lot of people like their bread with the, you know, putting butter on it when it's nice and warm and eating it. Save that for home. But unfortunately, what we do at home also goes out with us on the street. So it's always good to practice. You know, etiquette is changing habits. Practice, practice, practice. Like Mom said, you know, practice makes perfect. So,
now with the water glass on the right-hand side of the plate, that's also where the wine goblet goes?
Correct.
And does the water at towards the top and the wine follows it closer to the utensils?
The water is the closest to the utensil, and then the water goblet will be slightly behind. Well, it's behind, not slightly. It'll be behind. And then it's also in the order that you drink it. So it'll be, again, working from the outside in. So let's say you're going to have a red wine with an appetizer, white wine with your meal. So it would be your red wine glass out on the furthest out. then it would be your white wine glass closest to the plate, and then it's your water glass that's, let's see, directly above your dinner knife. So I know I may be hard to visualize, but
no, but I'm writing it down as you're explaining it. So let me reiterate. So the water glass is closest to the utensils to the right of the plate. Then from that, at like an angle that would be on a watch would be 10 after the hour would be the wine, and then on top of that another wine. So you drink from the top down.
Okay, it's like you go. Okay, so you have your knife directly above that is your water.
Mm-hmm.
Behind
to the right.
That
to the well, it would be to the slight right.
No, literally behind. So you have your knife, then you have your water right behind that, or right on top of that. So if you have your knife, you know, make a draw line directly up, and then a little behind at a slight degree of an angle would be your white wine, your red wine right next to it, and then anything else. But you wouldn't want to put too many things out on the table at once, because then you're going to be a table for one. If you have glasses and utensils and everything, you know, you need room to eat too. So
and
you may want to bring out things as you drink them and or eat them.
But the point is that what's furthest away from you, like the utensils, is what you sip from first.
Sure.
Okay.
Correct.
Now, what is the difference between a red wine goblet and a white wine goblet?
The red wine is generally, the bowl is going to be bigger at the bottom.
So it's more of a bowl.
Wine, correct.
Okay,
and then
the white
it's not
is,
like a right.
It's more
right.
of a U.
It's more like a tulip.
Okay. Yes, and I'm understanding how you're saying that. And then what about who eats first? Who slices first, or who takes the first bite?
Once everybody is served, there you can eat together.
Okay, so there's no protocol with women or host or anything like that.
If it's a private event, again, at someone's home, you follow the hostess lead. So as soon as she picks up her utensils, you pick up your utensils. So you're kind of playing, you know, follow the leader
Okay.
The hostess picks up her utensils, you do the same thing too. The same thing at a business meal. Of course, you know, again, there's always going to be these rules. So at a business meal, the VIP person, you know, you follow their lead. If you're with your boss, you follow his or her lead. So that's the protocol on that.
Now, if you have to leave the table, where do you put your napkin? On the table or on your chair?
On your chair.
Okay. And you shouldn't hang it on the back of the chair. I assume you put it on the seat of the chair?
You put it on the seat. Now, I have heard that some people are a little and don't like the idea of putting their napkin where they sit down, which, okay, you know, so behind the chair, that's where a wait staff would put it when you leave. So it's become acceptable, but the rule still is your napkin goes on your chair when you leave, and it goes to the left of the plate when you are through with your meal.
Left when through. Okay, I love this. Now, when is it acceptable to use your fingers?
When you're eating finger food.
So a chicken drumstick, a chicken wing?
Yes, absolutely. Except, of course, if you are at a upscale restaurant, then you would use your knife and fork. Same thing with French fries. Finger food, you know, you use your fingers, enjoy it. However, if you're at an upscale restaurant, then the rule is you use your knife and fork, and or let's say you're eating chili fries, even, you know, at home. If it's going to be quite messy, then you may want to, just to avoid getting dirty, etc. But the rule is finger food is eaten with your fingers.
Okay, because last night I had a date and we ordered ceviche, which had tortilla chips that you put scoop on or scoop in or whatever, and calamari.
Right.
I was picking up the calamari with my finger and dipping it into the sauce. My date was using his fork and knife.
Again, it goes back to finger food to finger food. However, it depends at the where you are at, your surrounding. So you were fine. Unless you were at an upscale restaurant.
So we were at happy hour at the bar. So I assume my fingers were okay.
It's acceptable. Yeah.
Okay.
But also, too, if you are with somebody that you need to impress. You always want to be more conservative than any other time. Now, if you go to a, let's say, to a barbecue place, absolutely, you're going to pick, you know, and he or she is eating the ribs, being, you know, the most, the person you're trying to impress. Then you do, you know, then you go ahead and pick it up. But if it's at an interview or, again, just somebody that, an account that you're trying to land, always just be a little more on the conservative side, mm-hmm. and you'll be fine.
So when in doubt, default to being as proper as possible.
Exactly.
Because one of my favorite sayings is you don't get a second chance to make a good first impression.
Absolutely. If you know, you have somewhere between 4 seconds and 30 seconds, but 30 seconds I think is too long. I say you have a good solid 10 seconds to either change somebody's mind, because we actually start judging the moment we see somebody. Mm-hmm. We start to, you know, our minds start to go. And so within those first 10 seconds, you have the opportunity to either change that perception of you or solidify that perception of you. Yes, I am confident and I do know my stuff, you know, or yes, I am insecure and or rude. So, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not just that, it's body language, how you walk, that handshake, eye contact, allow, you know, a nice, clear, crisp voice, not so low and not so squeaky high, you know, somewhere in the middle. And that sums up your pretty much your first impression. And okay, yes, let's go. Good. Woo-hoo.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine after the first impression comes the reinforcement of your behavior. Because so if you're not chewing with your mouth open, or you're not putting your napkin in your lap, or I mean, you can make or break from there, but 10 seconds is a good one to know that, okay, that's when you have the most opportunity to be favorably right. received. Tell me about the younger folks, because of all the texting, like you said, and the Instagrams and the Twitters and whatever, because it's, we keep condensing how we communicate. Now, your tweet can only be 140 characters, so that's, I mean, in my text, my girlfriends always laugh, as I use punctuation and capitalization and proper grammar, and I don't use the letter U for the word Y-O-U and the mm-hmm. letter R for A-R-E. Is there something to that, or am I just being old-fashioned?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. So here's my advice for anybody who does text talk. Make sure that the recipient understands your text talk, and more importantly, when you go to compose an email, I see a lot of mix. You know, when it's an email, just think of it as writing pen to paper. Dear blank, using full words, using your punctuation, you know, your middle, your end, you know, sincerely, best, warm, you know, regards, and then your name, first and last name. And that's where I see a disconnect, because so many young people are into the texting, 140 characters, as you said, you know, the U, the no punctuation, all small letters are all capital, you know, et cetera, the emoticon, you know, which is okay for friends, but there's a lack of transition into the, you know, adult world where you have to write out sentences and be proper with your grammar. So, you know, make sure you know, one, your recipient, that they understand the lingo, and two, when you can't do text talk in an email and or your schoolwork. That's for texting. You don't carry it back and forth.
And the one thing that we opened our conversation with that I appreciate is I find it exceedingly disrespectful and rude when people are texting in front of me, male or female, date or not, girlfriend or not, neighbor or not. It's like, really? You can't just put that down? I mean, it's different if, and I'll say, I'm waiting for a call from my daughter. She's in transit, and that's the only reason I have my phone out. So I hope you won't mind that when she calls, I'll just make sure she arrives safely. And that's the exception, and I set the expectation for that. But people are checking their phones all the time. And it's like, are you on call? Or is there, you know, whatever, and it doesn't seem to matter.
Yes, absolutely. And what you did is perfect. if you are expecting a phone call, if you're with a group of friends, somebody is lost, and they're, you know, you're their point of contact and they're calling you, then you tell, you're telling people, this is why my phone is out. You can either put it on your lap, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be on the table, but you're still telling them, this is why I'm checking my phone, this is why my phone is out, in, you know, a few words. But once the situation is over, then that phone gets put away. Whoever you are with gets 100% of your attention. Give them that same respect that you want in return. You know, the golden rule, do unto others as you want done to you. You know, so to remember that same thing when you are at an award show, if you are at the movies, place of worship, if your phone rings, well, one, it should be on vibrate and right. or off. You don't answer it. If you do, for whatever reason, have to answer it because you are waiting for that important call, you can pick it up, and then you excuse yourself. You right. don't cover your mouth, think that no one's going to hear you. Not only do we still hear you, now we see that you are doing something because you're fidgeting, you're moving. Mm-hmm. Excuse yourself. And mm-hmm. texting in the movie theater, yes, we do see it, and yes, it is annoying. So please don't excuse yourself or yeah. sit in, you know, in the back so that's where you can easily come and go.
Jules Hurst, etiquette expert, contact information and anything you wanted to promote before we say goodbye?
Yes, you can actually get a free ebook on dining, do's and don'ts, 10 things, 10 most important things to remember, as well as a diagram on how to remember, which is your bread plate and your water, at juleshurst.com. And this Sunday, no, I'm sorry, on Monday the 22nd, I will be teaching social and dining etiquette for youth and for youths in Westlake Village. And again, information for that is at my website, juleshurst.com.
Excellent, Jules. Thank you so much for your time. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation.
Yes, thank you for promoting civility. I really appreciate it.
You are very welcome, Jules. Continued success. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So there we know. And the best takeaway for me was BMW. B as in bread, left. M as in meal, middle. W as in water, right. So that breaks it down quickly. So thank you for your time. And now we're going to chat with Ellen Smoke. She's going to talk to us about strong women. And we'll be right with you.
The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation, on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, Ellen. It's Maria Sanchez. You're live and on the program. How are you?
Hi, Maria. How are you?
I'm doing okay. My heart's limping along, but we're making progress. And we spoke last week, and the conversation needed to be continued because we exchanged it. Series of emails about strong, accomplished, capable women who have achieved a modicum of success and why that seems to be a threat to men.
And yes, we were talking about that. It's an interesting subject.
And one of the exchanges that I thought was interesting that you and I had via email was that you said that feminists have kind of ruined it for women because of demanding equality. And I think that's not the case. I think that we're entitled to equality, and we can still, like I said, we can be capable in the boardroom and a vixen in the bedroom. And I don't see an issue with that, but I believe, and my life experience has shown me, that men can't distinguish between that so much.
Yeah, and I apologize if I mentioned that I thought feminists had ruined us. I was more thinking about just the general feminist movement and how we as women had to start stepping into our masculine roles. And so energetically, the energy has been shifted in romantic relationships. So women are carrying a much more masculine energy about themselves. If you think about it, when we first had to go into the workplace, we had to fight our way in. We went from wearing dresses to wearing suits. We had to go into boardrooms and start to literally fight our way to the top because we were being ridiculed, we were being questioned, we were being threatened, we were being sexually harassed. So over the years, we have just become, the more successful we are, that we have become more masculine. And it's not happening that this, I am talking in generalities. So, you know, some of us have learned how to be that, still be that vixen in the bedroom. But oftentimes what happens is we go home at night or we go out to happy hour or we go on a date and we're still in that masculinity that we are during the day. We're still aggressive. I even had a friend of mine in L.A., Masher out in L.A., and he said, I'm so sick of women competing with me. And that's what he mean. And I asked him to be more specific, and he said, well, it's not really what they say. It's just how I feel when I'm around them. I feel like they're competing with me. And what he's picking up on is that aggressive masculine energy, which is the same energy that we need to go out there and be accomplished. So how do we learn to turn it off at the end of the day?
I think what I have discovered is that it's not necessarily the energy that we're putting out. It's their perception of what we've achieved, and then they're identifying that with being masculine. Probably not on a conscious level, but on a subconscious level.
I would totally agree that it's all subconscious.
I mean,
yeah, and at the same time, men are becoming more, you know, less and less masculine in their own right too in the dating world. You know, they are getting much more used to us approaching them. I had another man recently, a client of mine, say, come to think of it, I don't even approach women because I know that they're going to approach me. So everything's just been skewed. The modern dating world is a bit skewed. And I think we're all still subconsciously and consciously trying to figure it all out.
It's interesting because I wouldn't think to approach a man because I'm not aggressive socially. In fact, I'm backward,
yeah.
Which may be part of my challenge is that I default to old-fashioned ways, and I do expect the man to initiate, and I do expect them to make the first move, and I do expect them to call first, and then until you're in a relationship where I still default to, well, when he wants to talk to me, he'll call me kind of mode.
Yeah.
But it's funny because to be achieving and accomplishing, I don't know that you have to be aggressive. You have to be ambitious and you have to be capable. So I don't know if women who are capable, if they're aggressive really, or if they're just being imbued with that because we don't really have a whole paradigm of successful women until probably the boomers, I would say. Because really, if you think about it, when I was growing up, women stayed at home. My mom was a homemaker, and when I first started having babies, I had a career until after baby two, and then I did stay at home for several years because I had 4 children in 5 years, and the logistics were just daunting. But now, in fact, I said to my date last night, I can't imagine a modern day couple not having a 2 paycheck household.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how it's possible in this with our economy and with the cost of things and with how expensive it is to raise children and et cetera. How can you not have 2 incomes in a household in general? So it would never occur to me that my daughter wouldn't work throughout her because she always says, oh, I'm just going to marry a rich man. I was like, nope, you're going to have your own career. You're going to have your own money. You're going to have your own power.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in an ideal world, going back to what you were saying a moment ago, that, you know, success doesn't have to be aggressive. It's just ambitious. Ideally, yes. You know, those of us women who can learn how to utilize our feminine energy in a way that's even more powerful, it's a more subtle power than it is a masculine energy. But I think without all of us knowing, without all of us really realizing, I think it's happening more subconsciously and more energetically. You know, they say that we become like the 5 people that we hang around the most, we hang out with the most. And many people, many women who are executives, they're hanging around men all the time. Sales teams are still typically all, you know, mostly male driven. So I think just picking up on that energy and then carrying it through, it becomes our way instead of, like you said, not having to be aggressive. And being softer and being able to stand in a power that's much more feminine and much more beautiful, much more receptive. So I think it's subtle what's happening. And I think it's just based on nuances of masculine and feminine energy. And the men who are threatened by success, I have found just with working with the male clients that I do work with, some of them have been a bit jaded by the very alpha, aggressive, successful woman. They've dated a couple of them, and so now they associate that success with that kind of an attitude and that kind of an energy. So it's not black and white. It's such a gray area right now, and I think everybody's still trying to figure it out. And what's fun for those listeners that are single, and for us too, and both of us are single, Maria, I actually experiment with this on dates, and I encourage my clients to do this as well, and single women to do this. Experiment with being soft and feminine and listening more and being receptive and noticing that when you start talking about work, what you do for a living, notice your energy changing and notice if the man across from you starts acting differently. So dating for discovery, you know, we are literally dating for discovery and dating to learn. And it's a good thing that we have the experience to go out with more people and multiple people before we find the one, because we can use these dating experiences as like learning tools and really an experiment to see what works and what doesn't. I actually find that the more I talk about what I do for a living on a date, the more I feel as though the date starts to shift away from romantic into work zone. So I'm actually careful, especially in the first few dates, not to talk about my work that much. So it's just something fun to kind of play with, especially in the beginning of a relationship.
Tell our listeners about your practice, if you will, what it is that you do.
Yeah, I am actually a professional love and relationship coach. And typically, because I've written a book on breakups, I work with a lot of people who are in some sort of breakdown, whether they are newly broken up, they are in a relationship that's in breakdown, or they've been single for a while and they feel like they're on this hamster wheel of always either not getting anywhere or attracting the same person with a different face. So I actually work one-on-one with people and in group settings to do what I call an inner reboot, just to make sure that we're past any blocks that can come in our way of relationship, and coming up with very specific strategies. I'm an action-oriented person. Like, I believe that change takes two things. It takes desire and action. So I have a very strategic love plan that I use for people, and it takes at least 30 days to do it. And if you do it from A to Z, then you'll get different results.
Well, I understand that we attract what we project, and that we also try to fix the primary relationships that we had in our life with choosing folks that seem to represent that broken cycle and that we want to make whole. So what, I mean, because that apparently is subconscious that we do that. So I would imagine that would be difficult to unlearn that behavior.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, I've been there too. You know, mine was my dad, which it will be for a lot of women, trying to either fix our dad, or make peace with a relationship that we don't have with our dad. So yeah, there is a lot of subconscious work that goes into it. And what I see, I've started to call it recently the self-help vortex. Mm-hmm. We read books and we listen to teleseminars and we go to conferences and we're on information overload and we have analyzed ourselves to death almost. You know, we have had aha moment after aha moment and still nothing shifts. You know, what's important is that we find the tools and techniques that can actually do the shifting and can actually do the rebooting and the rewiring. Until we do that step, then we can remain aware, but we're not necessarily getting any different results. So that can be a challenge for a lot of us. It was a challenge for me for a long time, because, you know, just being aware of something doesn't mean that that any change is taking place.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, because we only learn from failure, because obviously if we're successful, there's not a lesson there because what we're doing is working. So it's like, what a conundrum that is. Ellen, we're out of time. You want to share your contact information? We'll, of course, post it when we post the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody out there that's going through any sort of break up or breakdown, you can go to breakupforabitch.com. You can also go to ellensmoak.com, ELLENSMOAK, And yeah, I'm pretty easily accessible and very willing to talk. So anybody who needs some help, just reach out.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
As always, appreciate your message too. Take care.
I appreciate you. Thanks for calling. Bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Ellen Smoke. And of course, we'll post that information when we post the podcast later today. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a fabulous day, and we look forward to visiting with you tomorrow.
Talking.